find his work for Comcast Sports Online, CSNNW.com. He's talking Ducks with the trio of Kent, Harrington, and Newman. Comcast Channel 737 in high def on my Xfinity system. On Twitter, the handle, at Aaron J. Fentress. Mr. Fentress, welcome back to Oregon Safely. How you doing?
I'm doing great. I was just on Twitter debating some Oregon State fans who are saying that Oregon shouldn't have new uniforms every game. Instead, they should use that money for scholarships for other students.
Here we go. Just a complete lack of understanding of how anything works.
It's hilarious. I'm like, one has nothing to do with the other.
It's completely irrelevant, but it is orange.
Oh, my God. So funny. And, of course, since I didn't agree with them, they turned into personally attacking me as a journalist. I must be a Duck fan. They liked me better when I was at the Oregonian. And you're still around. I didn't know you still existed. Blah, blah, blah.
That's awesome.
It's like I'm on the radio 4 times a week. I'm TV 5 times a week. I still write at break news, but they didn't know I existed. Probably because you're Beaver fans and, like, I don't cover irrelevant programs. I don't know.
Oh, I see what you did there. They are dancing
like
in the streets of Eugene
like
right
that?
Now. Yeah, nice. So let's get to what's really important. You've visited some great places, Super Bowls, Natties, Rose Bowl, great basketball venues. I've never been. I've heard Memorial Stadium, pretty cool place for a football game on a Saturday during college season. So what'd you think? Did it live up to its historic reputation?
It did. That place was awesome.
Nice.
I mean, it was just massive. I mean, like, where the Coliseum in L.A., Memorial Coliseum, the Rose Bowl, wait, the Rose Bowl and the Coliseum.
Right.
They do different things. Anyway, they're huge, but they're more like, I can't describe it. It's just, they have the track, so you're further away from the field, and of course they're old, and the seats go out more. This is like a true football stadium where it's on top of the field just like Austin, but then it's just more massive, especially in the end zones with the way they have the seatings and go around through the corners, and it's just high, and it's just like, wow. And it was almost all red. I tweeted out, like, who the knuckleheads have missed the memo about wearing red? Like, I don't understand how can you show up wearing white when, like, 90,000 people and 8,000 in red? Who are the fools who show up in white? Like, what's your problem? You just being a contrarian?
Yeah.
And then you had three little patches of the green and yellow, which I thought was just amusing. And they were like, it was just like, you're stuck here in the corner, and then we'll put you in this corner, and we'll put you over here in this corner. You just sit there and just be good.
Last week, we talked about all Devin Allen brings to the table and the pressure he puts on a defense, and naturally, he's done. So how are they well-suited to take a hit at that position? I mean, what would you say is the fallout and maybe who this might open the door for opportunity-wise?
Yeah, you know, they definitely miss, you know, the 4.4 speed. I mean, he's got elite speed, legit elite speed, not the pretend 4.4. He's a legit guy who can fly. But, you know, I hate to say that. I hate to just discount him and losing him as being just a ginormous impact. But I think they'll be fine. Like, I don't think at any point really this season – people are going to sit around and go, man, if we just had Devin Allen. And that's not because he isn't very good. It's because they're just loaded at that position. Like, you know, they're,
sure.
They're just stacked. And so, you know, guys like Jaylen Brown, who we have seen in action, obviously, and then, you know, Alex Ifadole and Dylan Mitchell are going to, you know, get more reps. And these are all four-star kids, just like Devin Allen was. And we haven't seen a ton from them only because Oregon's been so top-heavy at receiver. But they're coming up, and they're going to all – they have all a chance to be just as good as Braylon Addison, as Josh Huff, as Stanford, as Allen, as all these guys. And so, you know, getting them a chance to play a little bit more here and there is just going to help their development, and it's just going to show that they're still stacked at that position. So I think more so it hurts the team from the emotional standpoint, from just being devastated about this happening to their friend a second time in 3 years, and the coach has expressed a lot of emotion about it. But word from Helfrich on Tuesday was that, you know, Devin was the first guy at practice. And he's still going to plan to be around and, you know, sort of be an inspirational leader and help as much as he can.
We're talking with Aaron Fentress, Comcast Sports Net. Early in the loss last week, obviously, Freeman goes out, never comes back, shows up limping at practice. Then he looks like he's okay. What is the latest update, and what would be your call based on the depth at the position if you found out he was not 100%?
Oh, I'd sit him for sure. Get that guy right. You're not close to desperate enough to have him play. You know, even if they were playing Washington this week, I would say get him healthy because Washington's defense could put a hurting on him if he's not 100%. No, seriously, if he's not as quick as he needs to be and he doesn't have the power he needs to have, that's not a game you want to mess around with because Washington's defense is going to bring it. But, no, get him healthy, you know, one, because, you need him healthy down the stretch of the season, and two, because you're stacked at running back. Like, those guys went out, and as a trio, I mean, clearly neither one of them is a specialist. Freeman, who I would say would be at least a second-round pick. I don't know if he has the pure breakaway speed. Well, he doesn't have the pure breakaway speed, but I don't know if he has enough speed to go along with his size and make him a first-rounder, sort of like Stewart was. Stewart had a next year that Freeman doesn't have.
Right.
And so at 235, he was a first-round pick. So I think Freeman, though, is at least a second-round pick, which I don't think any of the other running backs are, you know, first day or first 3 day picks. I think they're all maybe late rounds if they get drafted at all. Taz might have to be a receiver. Long answer. I'm just getting long winded on this. But to answer your question, as a trio, they're money because they all give you different things. You know, you get the fumble return by Arian Spring. To me, the exchange of the game, even though Oregon won, but that was the biggest mistake of the game, was one Nebraska made on that lateral. Arian scoops up, goes to 50. And I assume, I didn't ask, but I assume they knew they were running a pulling play, which might create a big hole. And they got Taj Griffin in there, and boom, he's gone. Now, Tony could have taken that to the house, too. Maybe Kenai could as well, but no one has a first-step quickness like Taj does. He has Deontay-type first-step quickness. And he just hit that hole. And before Nebraska could even change direction, like he was gone.
Gone.
And then you have Tony, who gives you that type of speed, but a little bit more power. And then you got Kenai, who gives you the most power out of three, but has sneaky speed. Like his two long runs, he bounced off bodies first and then took off and accelerated. A lot like Royce does. He's sort of a poor man's Royce. So as a trio, those guys, what, they rushed 200 plus yards and like 9 yards a carry.
Oh, it's crazy. 50, yeah.
Yeah, 50, a 41, and a 46. And then Tony had 3 touchdowns. So, you know, they're going to be just fine. And this trio, and I've said this, you know, one of the reasons why I say they're going to be better next year, people always say, oh, well, you're going to lose Freeman. Yeah, but you're going to have these three cats back. And if they use these guys like they're using them now, I bet they run for as many yards next season as they will this season with Freeman, just because those three are pretty darn good.
All right, three words, go for two. They they peaked under Chip Kelly in 2010. They went for it 8 times, 11 so far. So you guys were talking about it. If the philosophy is the call is triggered by the defense and they think they should make it every time under those circumstances and they don't, who's accountable, and is it time for a rethink? What do you think?
This is one of those things that has so many different layers. Like, I was trying to get our producers on Talking Ducks today to go to the next – let's go to the next segment and continue this, because who cares about what we're talking about next? This is the most important thing that anyone cares about, because this is something that would be talked about for years and years to come, because they lost. But, you know, look, they've had the swinging gate for years. When they set up in it, they're on. I talked to Carson York about it. I said, when you were playing – he played for Chip. You know, when you guys were in the swinging gate, was it always on? He said, yes, it was always on. But back then, we would use, like, you know, someone at the quarterback position who wasn't like Charles Nelson. And so even though it was always on, our options were limited. And I informed him, he didn't know, but I informed him that Helfrich said that one of the reasons why they're doing it more often is because they love Charles Nelson's skill set. The fact that he can hold and run with great quickness and has, you know, the athleticism to do what he did on the first two-point conversion, like dive over two guys into the end zone, just gives them more options. Plus, he can throw a 5-yard pass. So there's more go options with this group with him in there, which means you're going to see more attempts. Now, in the Oregon's defense, from a coaching standpoint, strategy-wise, they got what they want. If you look at the bottom of the screen on the second and third one, they had 3-on-2. You know, you have, and 3-on-2 with two eligible receivers. So if you sprint over there, and you got two blocking two, and one guy goes to the end zone, how do you defend that? Even if one guy gets, and even if one blocker gets beat, as long as it's not the middle blocker, if one of the two other guys block, they get beat, well, that defender is now coming at Charles, and then that guy who got beat just runs in the end zone, you just dump it to him for a touchdown. I mean, this is the type of stuff you do in flag football, and it's impossible to cover. And essentially, it's a flag football play because the guy who has the ball is not intending to ever get touched because he's going to get rid of it or he's going to run in untouched.
Right.
The problem is the receiver on the first one didn't get far enough into the end zone. That's what it looked like to me. And on the second one, he chose to run instead of take the exact same play he had before to the left. And then the offset slot guy pass pro'd instead of drive blocking like a run block. And so then it clogs it all up and Charles gets tackled. So they botched it from the execution point. So drawing it on the chalkboard, it's sound. You should score more than 50% of those if you get 3-on-2 on the left with Charles Nelson running out there. There's no doubt about it. I would advocate taking that chance as well. But you have to blame the coaches because they screwed it up. And that's on the coaches. So if you're a coach and you're going to risk the sure one to try and get an extra one, you better have it locked down that they're not going to jack it up. Because if you don't, you're going to lose the game. And the other point I made is name me a time in history where that extra stuff has mattered. It's only that Cal game in 2015 where they won 15-13 and Cal had to go for two because of Oregon. Right. Okay. Now, Carson York made the point to me. I talked to him today about it. We'll talk about tomorrow on hashtag ZexFootball. As he said, you know, the thing people have to understand, though, even though the 2 points in other games didn't matter, the fact that we went down there and scored, even if we went down and scored and it made it 27-17, the fact that we would just go for two and make it 29-17 is like just pumped us up. It just fired us up. Like, yeah, take that. You know, it gave them that, you know, shove it down your throat mentality, which is all well and good. But again, you just told me how many times they did it on a chip. They only did it, you know, every other game. Right? You know what I'm saying? So it's hard for me to buy that converting one every other game with some big impetus to their great bowl game runs. I don't buy that. Like, it doesn't mathematically make sense, but Carson said it meant something to them. So therefore, fine, I'll give Carson the benefit of the doubt. The bottom line is it cost them this game, period. And it's going to take, I would take, two or three times they have to win with this strategy where it matters to make up for that loss. And I don't think people are going to forget that loss for a long time. And it's always going to look bad.
Yeah, by the way, for you guys posted the graphic. I had to freeze it to write it down. Kelly's last 3 years, they went for...
Like 9-for-11 or something? Or what was it?
Well, they went,
for 13?
Yeah, they went 7-for-8 in 2010. Then they only went for it 7 times in 2011, 5-for-7.
Five.
Yeah, and then 4-of-6 in 2012. So, they were really successful. And plus, as somebody who had a habit back then of betting the Oregon when Oregon, betting the over when Oregon was playing, I was definitely on board.
You liked it. And then last year, Oregon goes 0-for-4, but that was with a different personnel group.
Yep.
Now they have Charles, and Charles right now is 3-of-8, and as a team, they're 4-of-11. So it looks like, do they practice it? Like, because they should have scored on those. Like, you look at it, it's like, you got what you wanted. No one can say they didn't get what they wanted. You got 3-on-2 with a 4-4 guy running out there. And yes, the linebacker safety is going to come, but they're not going to outrun Charles to the edge. So you got what you wanted. So why'd you screw it up? Like, what are you doing? It's baffling to me. The other thing that I want to know is you have Hollins, a defensive end, as the receiver off the line of scrimmage. Why isn't that a tight end? You got three really good tight ends on your roster.
Yeah.
Why isn't that one of your backup receivers? Like a Fadale. Why are you trying to throw that to a defensive end? That doesn't make sense to me. And people say, well, he's gotta be able to block if they're gonna kick the extra point. Okay, well, your tight ends can't do that?
No.
I don't know. Maybe all the tight ends are already on it. I didn't look close enough. Maybe they're already on PAT and he's an interior guy. I don't know. It just seems weird if you're gonna have that guy be so important on that play as a receiver, make that guy who's flexed out there a tight end.
Yeah, it's basically good theory, poor practice. So that's what they need to work on.
So the next thing is, are they going to continue doing it? Here's my prediction. Colorado's going to defend it, and they're going to come out, show the swinging gate, and the fans are going to boo, and then they're going to come together, and AJ Styles is going to kick an extra point, and the fans are going to erupt like it was a touchdown. Basically sending a message to Helfrich, stop that madness.
The biggest eruption of an extra point that didn't win a game ever in football history.
Ever.
Be the first time. One of the segments you hit on yesterday I thought was important. The offensive line, we know about the youth, and you mentioned when Jeff Fisher went down during the run to the Natty in 2014, suddenly, Ty Crosby forced into action as a true freshman. Now he's out for the year, and you've got another red shirt who's going to step in Brady Aiello, but he's a red shirt. Similarities, or you think maybe this group might be better suited to handle losing an anchor, as you called him?
Yeah, the 2014 thing was compounded with Fisher because you'd already lost Johnson as well. So, and there was, I think there was someone else who was hurt, too. I can't remember who it was. Oh, well, Elijah George was supposed to be maybe the fourth tackle because Crosby was the third tackle. If everyone's healthy, it was Johnstone, Fisher, Crosby, maybe Elijah George, and then you get down to the nitty-gritty. So what happened, though, is that Elijah George got hurt. Who knows if he would have been panned out or not? We don't know. But Johnstone was hurt, and then Fisher was hurt. Yeah, Crosby was starting at right tackle because Johnstone was already hurt. So then you're flopping him to left tackle. So you're down to basically coming into the season using a guy you hope to redshirt at left tackle. And then at right tackle, you got to walk on. So you're basically playing arguably your fifth and sixth tackles, or maybe your fourth and fifth at best, based on everyone you had. I don't care who you are in the country, that's going to kill you. And it killed them for 2 weeks. They gave up 12 sacks. In the other 13 games that year when Fisher played, they only gave up 19 sacks. The year before, they only gave up 18 sacks.
Wow.
They gave up 12 in those two games. Now, this time around, though, you lose Crosby, but you have a guy like Aiello, who's a redshirt freshman, not a true freshman, and a guy who's a part of a class that they love and who has lived up to the hype. That what they did Saturday, they only gave up one sack, and they rushed for 330 yards at Nebraska, basically with four redshirt freshmen. Those guys are big, they're nasty, they're strong, they're powerful, they're well-coached, and they are athletic. They move really, really well. These are the type of linemen that Oregon fans have been hoping for years. 6'5", 6'6", 310-pound, 320-pound guy who can move and who has some power to him. That's these guys. And, I definitely you lose your best offensive lineman, a guy who might be a first or second-round pick. That hurts. There's no way around that. But they're way better suited to absorb that with Aiello playing left tackle. And then you've got other options. You got Zach Morgan to transfer. You got Cameron Hunt if you needed him at tackle. You got Throckmorton go left. You got Evan Voller. You got Pisarcik. You got like 10 guys who they've seen in action that you can play in a variety of different spots to absorb this situation. Whereas in 2014, they didn't have that depth and they lost two guys. Two of the three best linemen. And that really hurt, but they're going to be fine this year, I think.
All righty. You can follow him on Twitter at Aaron J. Fentress. Check out the podcast with Bree Amaranthus on his Twitter feed online.
And I've been wild, a deep fisherman. Listen to our podcast. He's a funny cat.
Yeah, I heard something about that. There's some spear fishing going on. People are complete lunatics.
Spear fishing, but he refuses to get in the water, and then he goes deep fishing with his family.
Nice. CSNNW.com every Thursday. Mr. Fentress, always appreciate the time and insight, and I'll see you Saturday.
All right. Bye.
Take it easy.